The Olympics conjure the image of single-mindedness, of an athlete's individual effort to improve, culminating in a medal whose ribbon only fits one.
Phelps needs to come back.
He gets it done again.
He did it.
He got it done again.
Phelps at the end gets it done.
He's magical. He is Superman.
However, the Olympic pursuit is anything but. Instead, entire families are mobilized to bankroll, coach, feed, and motivate athletes from the youngest age until well into adulthood.
And mom and dad love it. Now she's just wondering how her son did it again.
For some, gold at the games is a family tradition, which can materialize in both access and in pressure. For others, sport means sacrificing family time for an unprecedented and risky career path. Regardless, the sacrifices and the joys are always shared. From the front stoop to the top podium step, the Olympics are decidedly a family affair.
My grandma's very, very proud of it, and she tends to hoard the medals and the trophies.
I brought my dog, I brought my mom, I brought my nephew to the track.
This isn't just a victory for me to be here, it's a victory for everybody who was able to make this happen.
Whenever you see someone receiving a gold medal, there's not enough room on that podium for the many other people who would belong there standing with that athlete.
From NBC Sports, this is The Podium, a podcast about the Tokyo Olympic Games. As we near Tokyo, we'll bring you the story shaping the greatest athletic competition in all the world, held in extraordinary times. I'm your host, Lauren Shahadi, and over the 12 episodes leading up to the opening ceremony, we'll dive weekly into a facet of these games to discover the people and the places that will define them. Becoming a world-class athlete is rare. Winning a medal at the Olympics, even more so. As in, you have better odds of being struck by lightning, kind of rare. But in some families, athletic achievement flows like water.
My name is Jessica Fox, and I'm an Australian athlete competing in canoe slalom. I actually got into it because both of my parents used to compete in canoe slalom. So my mum raced for France and was a bronze medalist at the 1996 Olympic Games. And my dad was racing for Great Britain back in the 90s and was a five-time world champion and also competed at the Olympics in Barcelona. So it was always a big part of our family history and our family life. And I guess, once they became coaches and I kind of grew up on the riverbank, so it was inevitable that I might end up in a kayak as well.
Jess, did you view your childhood as unique? I mean, not everyone has parents who are world champion canoeists and are in the water daily.
That's an interesting question. I guess kayaking being such a big part of our life and being a bit of a shared passion between my parents and also my sister and I, but also with my grandparents too. You know, my grandpa was the president of a kayak club in Marseille, and I was actually born in France. So when we moved to Australia, I was about 4 years of age, and I guess the kayaking was always part of life in that my parents were coaches. So I would be at the riverbank after school, just be hanging out at the Whitewater Stadium waiting for them to finish. And when we'd go on holidays, the kayaks would come with us just because they were a great way to see the world. You know, you can see things in a kayak that you can't by foot or on land. You know, we can access really cool parts of the world in a kayak. So I think that's probably the best thing that we share as a family is being able to go out in a boat and share some nice moments on the water together.
And we're not talking a couple members of your family. I mean, it's an entire family affair, right?
I have a total of 9 paddlers in my family. So it starts with my grandfather. He was the president of the club in Marseille-Mazarc. His name was Alberto Belem. And then my mum, Miriam Fox, or Miriam Jérusalemi, as she was known, she raced for France. My dad, Richard Fox, raced for Great Britain. I raced for Australia. My sister, Noemi Fox, races for Australia. And I also have my auntie and uncle, so Rachel and Dave Crosby. So they both competed for Great Britain as well. And they've now got kids who are paddling. So my cousins, Mark and Sarah, also paddle for Australia, which is really cool. So it's definitely a big family family sport for us.
My family fights over board games. Is your family competitive at all, Jess? And does that add any pressure?
I think as a younger athlete, I definitely felt a bit more expectation or pressure, not necessarily from my parents, but maybe externally just having the Fox name. And I guess the people in canoe slalom, in the sport of canoeing, know the Fox name is, you know, with my parents and what they achieved. So there was a bit of expectation or I guess anticipation to see how my sister and I would be as athletes and how I would perform. And I remember my first junior world championships in 2010 in France. So I remember the loudspeaker just, you know, saying, so her mother was the queen of the water. Can Jessica be the princess of the water? And just sitting on the start line at my first major event and thinking, wow, that's a bit of pressure, especially because I could understand the loudspeaker in French. So I guess there were some moments where I felt a little bit of expectation, but I actually won those junior world titles. And I remember thinking, well, my parents never won those, so I'm a step ahead of them. I'm making my own story.
I love that. I guess the comparisons, right, are inevitable. And I think it's always so hard to put two athletes side by side, right? In this case, three generations. Being surrounded by a family with a shared passion like that, is there an atmosphere of almost chasing perfection?
Yeah, definitely. I think my family, everyone who has paddled, knows what it feels like to be on a good run. You know, you'll never have the perfect run. And I think a lot of athletes chase perfection, but it's just rarely there. You're chasing the perfection, but you've got to be comfortable with making a few little mistakes, but knowing that when you're in flow, everything feels effortless and you're gliding and you're flying on the water. It's a really cool feeling that I think can only really be described when it's an experience. So I think everyone can experience it in their own field. But it is really cool to be able to share that with my family. They sort of know what I'm talking about and they know what it's like to compete at a big event or to feel those nerves and that anxiety before a race. But also the elation, the pride, the relief when you get into the zone and you've done a great performance.
How does your family help you get in the zone?
Well, my mum is my coach. So I guess she has to wear two hats. She wears the mum hat and the coach hat. My sister's also my training partner and competitor as well. So we all share in the journey to get to the Olympics and the hard work that gets there, the analysis, the preparation. My dad's also involved and he's someone I look to for support as well. So having family in the stands, often they're not in the spectator stand. They're in the middle, you know, very close to me as part of my support team. But I also am lucky that I've had, you know, my grandparents in the stands before. And it is so special, you know, friends, family that come all the way to an event, make it really special to look up there and know that you're supported, but also to know that if they can't make it and they're watching on TV, you know they're there, you know they've been part of the journey. And I always love seeing photos of my family or friends or even, you know, kids, people I don't know and I haven't met, who send me photos of where they were watching the race or, you know, them cheering for the race. And that's really special because there's so many people out there who support you and it takes a village to get one athlete to the Olympic Games. So it is really nice to share that with them.
I want to know about the trophies and the medals. Do you share those? Just, I mean, 9 competitors in the family and some world-class careers. In your family's case, everyone does get a medal.
Well, my grandma seems to hoard a lot of the medals. She lives in France and often she's sort of the last call before we fly home. And if we've got excess baggage, you know, some trophies and things, they always end up at my grandma's house. So she's got the main collection. And then I have to say we don't really display them anywhere. Mine are all in a drawer really, but it's a very special drawer, I guess. We all know what we've achieved individually and as a family, and it is really special to have that. I know my grandma's very, very proud of it. And she, she tends to hoard the medals and the trophies.
Understandably so. What do you think is your family's secret to success?
I think it was always just expectation that we would try our best and that we would see something through. You know, if we set a goal, we would always try our hardest to reach it and that we would always, you know, do our best on the water or in whatever we pursued, really just applying ourselves and being disciplined in our goals.
While the Fox's approach seems to work, there is peril in pursuing excellence in the same field as family.
People who come from a legacy where their family has done something extraordinary, there are two basic lights that get cast. There is a lack of light, call it a shadow, or a spotlight. And both of those can be really intense for different reasons. I'm Dr. Michael Gervais. I am a sport and high performance psychologist.
Dr. Gervais, in your experience working as a sports psychologist with athletes who have tons of generational success in the same sport, what have you found?
If we're following in the shadow of somebody, it's really hard to live life to feel that you matter. Because when you walk into a room, most people miss your dignity and they see the dignity of the person that you're following in their shadow. The same is true on spotlight, but it has a different experience, is that there's a level of expectations, there's a level of standards, there's a level of ways that people want to see something from you. And so the spotlight effect creates a diminishing experience for people. And then the shadow effect also creates a diminish. So if we're not careful, those are the two downstream, often not intended by anybody that, you know, from the family, but it's really the expectations that are set from others most of the time.
But we've seen athletes like Jess Fox kind of overcome that, right? What's the trick?
So the way that we help athletes work from that setting is to know what their unique purpose is, to help them identify the goals that are going to support that purpose, to help them increase their sense of agency, that's a fancy word, for their sense of internal power, their ability to show up in any environment and uniquely be themselves. And when we do that, we end up decoupling who they are from what they do. So the way that other people see them no longer defines them. Because who they are is determined not by what they do or how people respond to what they do, but their dignity is intact because they have a deep commitment of understanding their true nature. And that self-discovery process is not something that happens in one journal. It's not something that happens in one conversation. It is a life commitment to do the internal work to know who you are. Now, you know, that is not just reserved for those who have a legacy of success in their family. That type of practice is available for all of us. To know who we truly are, the power of that is that nobody can ever take it away from you. So no outcome, success or failure, can define who you are. It becomes the opportunity to express parts of what you want to express in life, how you want to do you, so to speak. And so the foundational work for all people, legacy or not, is to know who you are, do the self-discovery work so that an environment or an external condition does not dictate your internal experience, but rather you have the agency, the internal power to dictate your own experience in life in harmony with environments where you can hopefully express yourself towards your highest level in any condition, across any setting, in any environment, no matter what the circumstances are, you know how to bring your very best. That is the psychology of excellence.
And now, an improbable but not impossible Olympic moment with Ahmed Farid from NBC Sports.
It's the 2004 Athens Olympics, and the men's individual saber final so far is a blowout. Hungary's Zsolt Necsik has built a 5-1 lead. Each point now is scored by striking one's opponent above the waist. But it's a leg cramp that is hampering Italian Aldo Montano. He pushes through the discomfort, though, gritting his teeth through the fencing mask's mesh, his heart rate elevating with every beep of a starting round.
On guard. In this sport, based on duels meant to draw blood, the stuff currently rushing through Aldo's veins is nothing short of noble. The Montano name has been synonymous with Olympic fencing since 1936, when Aldo's grandfather, also named Aldo, brought a silver medal from the Berlin Games back to the Tuscan port town of Livorno. Aldo Sr. repeated the feat in the 1948 Olympics, this time bringing his silver medal home to a two-month-old son, Mario. That infant would go on to beat his father's streak and medal in three Olympics, Munich, Montreal, and Moscow. All saw the Montano name on saber podiums, and not just one Montano. Mario won his medal in 1972 and 1976, accompanied by his cousins, Tullio and Tommaso. In Montreal, yet another Montano, Carlo, medaled in team foil. It seemed as though the goddess Hera herself had bestowed upon this Italian family the birthright of Olympic fencing success. Despite the cramp, Aldo Jr. has kept up with his opponent, but time is running out. Standing at 13 points to Neshek's 14, he is just one mistake away from giving the win to the Hungarian. Using his redoublement, Aldo ties the match at 14. Whoever strikes first now will win a gold medal. The competitors take their places. This may be the first Olympics for Aldo, but the name printed on his shoulders is in a familiar place. And with that, Aldo thrusts a third generation of Montano fencers proudly into the history books. It's now 2017. Aldo Montano is one of the most successful saber fencers of all time. His four Olympic medals and world championships surpassing even his father's, uncle's, and grandfather's incredible pedigrees. He and his wife, Russian track and field athlete Olga Plekhina, have just brought a daughter into this world. Her surname is Montano. Now her father must fill in a given name. One that, considering history, may very well appear on a medal count someday. Olympia. Olympia Montano. A perfect name for someone with gold in their veins.
Here's a different way to make the Olympics the family business. Marry an Olympian.
Hi, my name is Tynita Butts Townsend. I'm from the United States of America, and I do high jump.
Hey, my name is Roderick Townsend. I compete for Team USA as well, and I'm a high jumper and long jumper.
Ty and Rod, you're married to track and field in two ways, right? Both in the pursuit of athletic excellence and in your commitment to each other. As husband and wife, I need to know the story of how you met.
Instagram. So I was on Instagram. This was in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I'm not all that savvy with social media. Let's just start by saying that. And I knew that people were going to laugh at me today. But like, so now it's obvious that you can just start a message on Instagram through DMs and just say, hey, how are you doing? But the origins of Instagram were you had to start it with a photo. And I didn't know what I wanted to say. And I didn't know that you could just start a message without sending a photo. So I sent her a picture of a pizza. And I was like, hey, I don't know what to say, but here's a picture of a pizza.
Yeah. So, no, I thought it was pretty cute. I guess Rod thought I was getting a lot of messages from guys. And like, this was like an everyday thing for me, but it wasn't. And he just kind of caught my attention with his personality and his conversation. And that's how we end up connecting.
Track and field athletes connecting over pizza works, right? So tell me what it's like to be married with very similar careers and working with each other so often. What's that dynamic like?
Well, for us, it's been very beneficial in a sense, being with somebody who's going through the same thing day in and day out, yeah. and being able to understand that, yeah, she may be in Jamaica for a track meet, but that's not vacation. And I think that for us, it was very, very...
Sometimes it is.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, like, it's tougher to be with somebody who's not in the sport and they don't understand that
yeah.
working out isn't just a hobby, that, you know, traveling to all these places, although it's fun, it's what we have to do.
Yeah, I don't have to explain that at all to him, because he's in it. He's doing it, experiencing it. And it's just, you don't even have to think twice about it.
Yeah, so I think that it works very, very smoothly. Very like, I think that, yeah, I don't know how better to describe it than it worked out exactly as I would hope.
I mean, he's literally my coach, my training partner, my cheerleader. Oh, man, he helps me tap into that beast, that champion's mindset, that go-getter mindset. And anytime that I may feel insecure or like I'm lacking anything or just distracted, he is really great at keeping me grounded and just narrowing in and dialing into my training and focusing on my goals. Like if we're having a hard day and I just want to skip out on that last rep, like Rod is, and it's not abrasive, it's not aggressive. It's so motivating how he just reminds me. He could say something as simple as 2 meters, babe. You got it, 2 meters. And all of a sudden, I just have a burst of energy to want to go get it. And it's so encouraging to have that with me all the time. And when he's not there, sometimes I get a little codependency, maybe a little, attachment. Separation anxiety, where I'm like, oh, man, he's not here. So I kind of got to keep his voice in my head. And just knowing, like, what would Rod do? What would he tell me to focus on today? You know, things like that. Like, he's just the perfect teammate to have.
That's so nice. Perfect teammate. Sure. But do you compete against each other ever?
Well, no, our personal, no, it's not tough to move the bar around, fortunately.
No.
We do try to compete against each other. So our personal bests are like exactly a foot apart. So she's jumped 6'4". And I've jumped 7'3". So when we do compete against each other, it's usually just a one foot handicap that we have where, you know, if she jumps 6 feet, I got to jump 7.
What about the team dynamic off the track? What does that look like?
Well, I think that like part of what I'm appreciating a lot, like my biggest hobby is cooking. I love cooking and I love eating just as much. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that I have it good because I have a massage therapist, but she has a personal chef. I mean, there's nothing that that she wants to eat that I can't make or that I do all the cooking. I do the shopping and I make sure that, hey, this is what we're eating today and that she's getting healthy food that tastes good on a daily basis. Yeah. And
wake up to like nice bowl of oatmeal and pancakes.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like, whether it's, you know, making her favorite breakfast or switching it up from time to time or, you know, just finding a way to make sure that she's enjoying her food, because a lot of athletes, we get to a point where we feel like, oh, my diet's so boring. So just trying to avoid that at all costs. And I think that it's also very rewarding to be able to have a person who keeps you strong when you're feeling weak and who you're able to keep disciplined when they're starting to go astray as well. But also really enjoying those times where you want a donut and they want a donut too, so you get a donut. those are probably my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I feel like Rod supporting me, that was in our relationship, that was something new for us, because it was usually the other way around. He's the one that went to the Olympics, you know, he's the world champion. So when I made it to world championships in 2019, to see him in the stands during prelims, coaching me and being so supportive, like that was everything. I don't know if I could have done it without him, honestly, to have that support.
She said that. I make good steak.
He makes awesome steak.
I'm just playing. But she says that she couldn't have done it without me. I mean, I would love to take credit for all that. however, I was in the stands, and I mean, I felt at a point where I would tell her something and she would do the exact thing, or I'm over here trying to figure out, you know, she looks at me and says, okay, what do I need to do now? And I say, do that exact same thing again.
Yeah, I feel like the less we talk on the field between athlete and coach relationship that we have is the more cohesive we are.
So let's say over the course of the summer, you do end up on a podium in Tokyo. What do you think will be going through your mind?
It's about a lot less than track and field, personally. And a lot of that has to do with the story that I have in my testimony as a person and as an athlete now. Because when I was able to stand on the podium for the first time in Rio in 2016, my training was the very last thing that I thought of. And I'm sure this story is going to be so much different from everybody else that's asked this question. But when I am at the games, although it was like, okay, this is what everything is led up to, it was more so for me about like, wow, like this isn't just a victory for me to be here. It's a victory for everybody who was able to make this happen. My mom, you know, who was a teenage mother, my uncle who helped raise me, everybody who was able to really, really make this happen. And none of that has ever been taken for granted. So when I think about family and the Olympics, it's just one of those things that it's for all of us who are there. And that's me speaking of my family and myself. And it's just a matter of like just truly being able to embrace and appreciate that moment, because it does come so seldomly that, you know, the emotion is very, very exciting, not overwhelming, but the emotions really run through you. And it's something that I look forward to experiencing again.
It's very similar to what he said, but I also like tie into what I said about, you know, just going out there representing more than just myself, but the women that I've been competing against that are now my closest friends, having them on my mind and on my spirit while I'm competing and just training for the Olympics, just knowing it's bigger than me.
That sense of only being one part of the family that got you onto the podium can be felt, not just by the athlete. In covering the last 14 Olympics, Tim Layden has seen this dynamic in action.
Let's take, for example, an athlete like Michael Phelps, who is the most decorated Olympian of all time and generally regarded by most people as the greatest Olympian of all time, just for his accumulation of medals over the course of five Olympics, and to the point where I'm not going to believe that he's not competing in Tokyo until he doesn't get in the pool, even though I know he's not competing in Tokyo. Over the course of his career, I spent a lot of time with him. And throughout that experience, you learn that, you know, with a guy like Phelps, there was his coach, Bob Bowman, who was obviously with him from the very start and in whom Phelps had implicit trust, but also many arguments and fights, especially when things weren't going well for Phelps. There was also a physical trainer who would manage his weight program. There was also a nutritionist who would manage the food that he ate every day. And there was his family, his mother and his sisters. There were the training partners that he had that pushed him in the pool. There were the friends back home in Baltimore who would cheer for him and share his exploits, but also call him out if they thought he was getting out of line. And by the time you finish determining on whose shoulders a guy like Michael Phelps stands, you're looking at dozens of people, any one of whom might have prevented him from winning one of those medals or more than one of those medals. Now, obviously, Phelps is the extreme example of this, but every athlete who makes it to an Olympic Games has at least a family, a coach, and other supporters who help them get there. And that's without even talking about financial support, which is an entire different silo, which all these Olympians need, because only a very small percentage of them can make a living as an Olympic athlete. Many of them need the support of sponsors or other benefactors just to get there. And the reality is that whenever you see someone standing on the top step of the Olympic podium receiving a gold medal, there's not enough room on that podium for the many other people who would belong there standing with that athlete.
Collaboration is Olympic and Paralympic. It fuels families and teams and is built around the love of sport. But no family's perfect. To think that the quest for gold is a one-person show is to ignore everything behind the curtain. So, gather your family, whether composed of relatives, teammates, or even competitors, and watch as support transforms itself into achievement. That's it for this week's episode of The Podium. Subscribe now wherever you're currently listening to get automatic downloads. For more Olympic content ahead of Tokyo, check out nbcolympics.com. And starting July 23rd, tune into the networks of NBC.